All right, let me jump on into today's Right Side Way opening monologue, and I'll just remind you guys that the Right Side Way is brought to you every single day by attorney Stan McDonald. Stan McDonald, a partner at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee in Huntsville. He's a 30-year veteran in the practice of law. He's also a longtime conservative, and I will tell you about Stan McDonald momentarily, but he is the sponsor of the Right Side Way monologue. Okay, so in order to get to my point today, I'm going to get into a story from when I was a kid, from right here in this listening area. So I was in third grade at Chaffee Elementary in Huntsville, Alabama. And honestly, that was not a real good year for me. I was in the immediate aftermath of my parents' divorce, still figuring out life. And I was what's known as a latchkey kid, which is a term I don't ever hear anymore, to be honest. But basically, I walked to school every day with a house key hanging on a string around my neck like a weird necklace, and then I walked home to my house and I let myself in with my key until my mom got home from work. Strange times indeed. I mean, mom was great, dad was still my hero, but life was really different. But my grandfather was one mainstay, and I spent a lot of time at my grandparents' house also. My granddad was a retired Army general, and they lived in southeast Huntsville, not far from where we lived. And he had been the post commander at Redstone Arsenal just a few years before that. My granddaddy taught me to fish. He taught me to play horseshoes. He taught me how to treat a gun like it was always loaded. It was kind of life lesson kind of stuff. And he was like a mainstay. And one day, he gave me a couple of things. Things that I found out in his garage. Which in my memory, that garage, it was like a giant room filled with all kinds of crazy cool things that any boy would love to get his hands on. I mean, that garage never had a car in it in my entire life. It never had a car in it because it was too full of granddaddy's stuff. There was old fishing tackle. There were parts for his boat. There were tools. There's memorabilia from 30 years of military service that spanned from World War II all the way through Vietnam. My granddaddy was George McBride, and he was a glider rider in World War II, starting with the 82nd Airborne and then with the 18th Airborne Corps. And one day in the garage, while I was poking around in some things that I wasn't supposed to be in, I put my 10-year-old hands on a clock, a small clock. It was very nondescript. It was a small black clock, about the size of a baseball. It was very, like, function over form looking, you know what I mean? It was kind of industrial looking, kind of chunky. Had a square metal frame on the front of it, surrounding the round, glassed-in clock face. And there were four holes, one at each corner, like it used to be mounted on something. I realized when I was looking at it that it was hinged so it could actually be opened up. And that's how you wound it. The mechanism to wind it was inside. And I couldn't figure out why that would be. Well, okay, so I was fascinated. So I took it back in the house, back to my granddaddy. And I asked him, I said, why is this old clock out in the garage? Well, he looked at it, and he got kind of thoughtful for a minute. And then he told me the incredible story that during World War II, he had taken that clock out of the dash of a German Messerschmitt fighter plane. How about that? A German Messerschmitt fighter plane. And he had used it for years like a desk clock. It sat on his desk. And then, while we're sitting there talking about it, he gave it to me. Told me to take good care of it. Well, that was a personal treasure. Let me tell you, a little third grade me is loving that. I loved that clock. It was like a symbol of great things, of cool things. My granddaddy had been in the war. And he took that clock from the bad guys, and now it was mine. Well, at some point after that, at school, we actually had a show and tell. So, yeah, I took my bad guy clock to school, and I showed everybody. And after that, it sat on my desk where I marveled at it. And other of my friends would look at it and go, that's cool, yeah. Well, being a kid, I couldn't help but fidget with it, right? I mean, I'm third grade. And I'd pick it up and look at it. And then it happened. The teacher was apparently having a bad day. She decided I was not able to handle having the clock with me until the bell rang to walk home with my key around my neck. So she told me she was taking it up because it was too much of a distraction. So over my third grade protest, she took up my World War II bad guy clock and she put it in the teacher's workroom. Well, when I went to get it after school, she told me the rule was that anything that had been taken up like that would be held until the end of the school year. You heard me. The end of the school year. My clock. So a couple of months later, school was out and I went to get my clock. And in one of the most insensitive, callous, and indifferent things I have ever seen, it turns out the clock was gone. But it wasn't just gone. It had been thrown away. As I was told later, it appears that the teachers had been cleaning out the workroom in their rush to get to summer vacation. And in doing so, somebody saw that old clock and nobody could remember what it was from. Just a small, chunky black clock. Why is this in here? I don't know. And they threw it away. They had forgotten that it had value to somebody else. It was in their care. but they didn't care, and they threw it away. And I had to tell my granddaddy about it. And I don't know if he was mad at me or not. He didn't show that he was, but I do know this. I do know he, by God, went down to that school and somebody got an earful from the general. I mean, you think about that. They told the kid to bring his favorite thing to school to show everybody. Then they took it away from him. Then they cast it aside. Make that make sense. Oh, that's right. You can't make that make sense. Okay, so why am I bringing this story up? Well, because I saw another story today and it triggered that memory, and I'll tell you about it. So early this morning, I was prepping for the show. Townhall.com ran a story that brought this whole thing to mind. Another one of those Biden boondoggles that blows your mind when you think about it. Remember this, Joe Biden, he never led a thing in his entire life. And it was not clear that he was even leading himself toward the ends of his presidency, right? So when Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th, 2023, they massacred thousands of innocent civilians. They took hundreds hostage, and the war against Hamas in Gaza has been ongoing ever since. Well, Israel's our ally. They have been for decades. But Joe Biden and his team, they were feckless losers, and they didn't know a thing about what it meant to lead from the front or to take care of your friends. They were always looking for a way on everything, but especially in this case, to appease someone or to please everyone, which meant you're doing nothing meaningful. So Biden announced that he supported Israel, but he was also going to ensure that aid and comfort was given to Hamas. Oh boy. So as part of this fiasco of foreign policy, you may recall that Biden announced in his 2024 State of the Union that he had directed the U.S. military to begin building a floating pier on the coast of the Red Sea. A floating pier. It's a real thing. It's called the JLOTS, the Joint Logistics Over the Shore Pier. The JLOTS. It's a floating pier which had not been used much, and it was really not made for this environment, to be honest. It involved huge floating sections of steel being linked together to make a pier with a causeway. It's a cool idea if you're working on calm waters. If you've ever read the Bible, you know the Red Sea is anything but calm. At a cost of $230 million, the floating pier was laboriously assembled in the waves off Gaza shoreline. And soon after getting it largely in place, and just as it was preparing to really go operational, rough weather broke away for the support boats that kept it working, and they were beached and put out of commission. Later that same week, a major storm hit the area, and the Pentagon confirmed that the causeway portion of the floating pier had been damaged. Much of it had broken off. The Israeli Navy, who was at war with Hamas, had to assist the U.S. in getting the portions back in place. At one point, Hamas militants mortared the installation. Aid trucks tried getting aid across the pier, but it was believed that Hamas was intercepting the aid because, after all, it was a war zone and, you know, bad guys got to eat too, right? That whole freaking thing, that $230 million pier, was operational for only 20 days. But more importantly is what we just learned. There was a major human toll that they didn't tell you about because a new report just came out. This shows that not only did we spend massive amounts of U.S. dollars on a reckless endeavor, but that 62 American service members were injured during the whole debacle, one of whom, Sergeant Quindarius Stanley. He died 6 months later while under long-term care for injuries he sustained while building the 20-day, $230 million pier to feed our enemies. And then the Biden administration quietly looked the other way and forgot about it. They just pretended it never happened. They washed their hands of all of it and threw it away like it meant nothing. $230 million in the blood of U.S. service members, and they cast it all aside like some kind of trashy little clock that somebody found in the corner of a teacher's workroom. That, my friends, is the bigger story. That, my friends, is the fact that governments do spend money, sure, but what is awful is when government becomes indifferent and callous and disorderly and insensitive. And that story of the Gaza JLOTS pier is like a giant version of my clock story. They told the folks to send their money. They told the folks to send their young men and their young women. And when we did, they took them, and they used them in a way that had never been considered, and they wasted the opportunity, and then they cast it aside because they forgot what they really had. That's why things like DOGE right now are so important. That's why it's necessary that we not only put a stop to the reckless use of our greatest assets, our time, our treasure, our kids, and at the very least, we have to demand that those to whom those things are entrusted will continue to recognize the value of what they've been asked to hold on to. And if they mess up, if they make a mistake, if they squander an asset, then don't for a second think that we're not going to be satisfied with the answer that, oh, we forgot what that was and didn't know what to do with it, so we threw it away. Sergeant Quindarius Stanley, he was 23 years old from Columbia, South Carolina. He served with the 3rd Expeditionary Sustainment Command at Fort Bragg. He was said to have been a fine young leader of troops. He spent 6 months in Brook Army Medical Center before he finally succumbed to his injuries. Sergeant Stanley and his family don't deserve to be cast aside. He needs to be remembered. And so should the massive debacle of the J-Lots Pier, where he and so many others were sent to do a job they had no business being sent to do. Make that make sense. Oh, that's right. You can't. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way.